and welcome to this episode of Talks with Tony. Now, this one is a little bit different. What you will notice is it's in a different location. It was actually recorded in Dubai alongside my friend and fellow podcast host, Ellie Mackay. So I kind of got a little sideways seat in and got to interview someone alongside Ellie, someone phenomenal, Master Shri. Now, for those of you who don't know Master Shri, he is known as the yogi with the Lamborghini. And in this episode, we get insight into his life from growing up as the son of a gang leader to finding spirituality to being called to come and become a master. So he's gone on a huge spiritual journey, but also connecting that to financial security and the ability to have the best of both worlds. So we talk everything from the law of attraction to through to generating huge amounts of money to enable him to become the yogi with the Lamborghini. It's a really exciting episode and I enjoyed it so much so that I wanted all of you to be a part of it too. So let me know your thoughts.
Master Shri Akash, so welcome to the On a Mission podcast.
Thank you for having me.
It's amazing sat here in the wonderful Dubai. But the title Master is a very honourable title. How does one become a Master? Because I'm presuming this isn't like a X Factor style application process where you're whittled down from 1,000 contestants.
Yeah, you get chosen actually. So I was chosen by a Himalayan yogi. His name's Grandmaster Aksha, and this was back in 2019. He asked one of his disciples to reach out to me to go up into the mountains with him to go through an initiation, which was a little bit scary at first because I didn't know what that was about, you know. And I heard that I need to be in the caves and go up in the mountains and 30 days there doing all these practices. So, yeah, but at the time I had come to a point in my life where I felt like I had completed everything. And so I just felt like there must be a reason behind why this happens now. And so I just said yes, and we ventured out and went through all the trainings, and here I am.
Wow. How did they select you then?
It's a little bit, so it's like you said before, it's not like handing in a CV or anything like that. So basically, in a short synopsis, with his intuition and his, we can say superpowers, intuitive powers, he can see and foresee the future of what is about to happen. So example being that before all this lockdown and COVID and everything, we already seen all of that happening back in 2019, but he knew it even before that. And so he knew that during this time, it's very important. In spirituality, actually, they call it the Dark Ages. And that's not saying, oh, it's all really doom and gloom and it's really bad. It's just saying that there's cycles. Like you guys talk about property, right?
Yeah.
Real estate. There are good times, there are bad times, and it happens. And the cycle will repeat itself every 12 to 15 years. It'll go again. But spiritually, energetically, it does the same thing. So when he recognized that, he knew that he needed what he would refer to as strong spirits to put out the right message to spread positivity during the times of darkness. And so I just happened to be that one that he found to select to go on that journey.
Wow. Was there ever a point where, because you said you were scared, where you thought, I don't know if I can do this. What if I do it wrong? What if I don't pass selection? Like, it sounds like an SAS protocol. What was the, is there a particular protocol to follow? Can you fail it?
He would not select somebody that would fail it to go through. Well, there would be no point because he has millions of students and disciples around the world. There would be no reason why he would select one to do one-to-one for 30 whole days and take up his time when he doesn't feel like that person can do it, you know? So I think that, it was selected that way. So it was never really what if it fails. Yeah.
You mentioned going up to the caves. Can you tell us a little bit about what you actually did over those 30 days and how it transformed your life?
It completely changed my life because Okay, put it like this. I always say there's a conscious mind. There is a subconscious, which we all know is even more powerful in regards to the results we get. It's all governed by the subconscious. But what a lot of people don't speak about is the superconscious. So the energy that is beyond just us as a physical. Some people name God, some people name universe, whatever, you know, people give a name. But that collective consciousness that created us, that was the biggest epiphany, because on the third day, accessing that, day one, day two actually was a struggle, because it was this nonstop yoga practice was extremely tough, because I was not that flexible, bringing this leg on this shoulder and this leg here and clamping here. There's no chance. So it was a big struggle the first 2 days. And I kept asking, why this physical practice is, I'm going to be a fitness trainer, or is this my thing? I'm supposed to be a yoga teacher. And he said, no, because we are opening up minor chakras, which nobody talks about, to open up major chakras, to activate and transmute the energies to move outside. Now, I never knew what outside meant. You know what I mean? Outside. It was very abstract for me, but I went along with it. And on the third day, we did this meditation where he said, focus here. There was a few other protocols. And then he said, can you see the light now? And then bam, like this flashes of white light and the big tunnel, and it's going like a million miles per hour through that thing. I got so shocked. I opened my eyes and I said, I seen it. And he said, yes, but this time I opened for you. He said, over the 30 days, you need to know how to open to be able to see it. And that from the third day was what got me hooked. The first 2 days I was thinking, 30 days of yoga training. You know? But from the third day onwards, it got me hooked, because I was fascinated. You know, I mean, seeing is believing. When you experience it for the first time, it's like, I want to know what this thing is, you know? And when you say, you know, it's interesting, you said before, you know, was that sometimes you felt scared or unknown and things like that. Of course, as a human being, your human mind would be like, what is this? You know, is this some dark black magic or what's going on? And what I realized was something that he was saying to me. He said that, and I really resonated with this. He said that you experience it. Is it guiding you towards good and positivity? Or is it guiding you towards bad and negativity? He said, if it's negative, then you should stop doing it, go back. He said, but if it's positivity, then this is for you. You know, you see that. And I really resonated with that, because, you know, for a long time, I got very confused in my upbringing about religion. Mm. It's a strange thing. You know, I grew up in a Buddhist family. Mm. I went to Catholic school.
Catholic school?
Yeah, saying the Lord's Prayer every day and everything. And then I'm still chanting these Buddhist things at home because they tell me to. And then I'm a little bit confused there. Then I get baptized later on. It's so much like, what is this? Which religion? Which God? Which this? Which that? And suddenly I'm in the Himalayan mountains. And then now I'm seeing glimpses of Hinduism, which is like very confusing to me. But what I realized that, hey, it's not really about, it doesn't matter what people believe in. It doesn't matter if you believe that this cushion is God, but the question really is, does it make you happy? Does it make you act in love? Does it make you act in positivity? If it does, then who cares if it's a rock you're worshiping, you know, and whatever works. So I got a good feeling from it. So I was just like, okay, well, let me venture out more and let me see what this is about.
And you also mentioned growing up that you were doing the Buddhist chants, but your dad was also a gang leader in Liverpool as well.
You've done some research.
I have done some research. It's just quite a fascinating story.
But everything happens for a reason, you know? I think it's exactly the same way how, just before we started the show, when both of you were saying about how it's interesting, we put so much positivity out there. Sometimes we help so many people. People say, you changed our life, but the closest people around us, we don't help. Mm-hmm. But actually, we can't help, or we find it hard to help them. But actually, there's a reason behind that. There's a reason why we are the positive one and the family members are that way. Because if the family members were not that way, we probably wouldn't be the way we are. Mm. So there has to be darkness for light to prevail, to see the light. And you become light from experiencing certain challenges. And so when you have so much darkness around you or so much negativity around you, it will eventually push one out to become the positive one. So there's a reason behind all of this. You know, it's the same thing as, you know, I see my father as a very different to how I seen him when I was growing up, you know. Like when I was growing up, I would see, although I knew he loved me, he did a lot for me, but I would see this very angry, very, you know, alpha male type of character. Now I see, like he was the perfect role model I needed. He was a leader, obviously a leader in a slightly different thing, but but he was a leader, and there are attributes.
Yeah, there is.
Like even if you look at, I'm not saying this is good, but even whatever gang leaders or even drug dealers or whatever, all these, they're systematic. There's leadership there.
There is entrepreneurialism there.
There are attributes there, and it's and I believe how I am today is because there was something to as a role model there to learn, you know. And it's just the intent and the direction is slightly different. That's the only thing, you know.
You can see that from a different side now, because obviously you've openly admitted you are a different person to the you of old. How difficult was that when you, because there's so much conflict in terms of religion, conflict in terms of the alpha male status, but you must go to a Catholic school and do what they do. You know, you learn to fight at a really young age. Mm. Do you believe that, how difficult was that to go from understanding that the conflict happened for that reason than when you were actually in it? Because it's easy to look back and see the positives. How difficult was that in your upbringing?
I don't think, even when I look at it now, I don't see it as difficult, because that was life to me. That was normal for me. Mm-hmm. So it's normal to see how that is. Actually, in fact, I don't know if I've shared this before, but I wanted to be like that. Like I wanted, when I was 15, 16, I would have this conversation with my mum and dad. I would say, I want to join the gang too.
Wow.
Mum would be crying her eyes out, like, what, like shouting and angry and everything. Dad would be like, yeah.
Why not?
Really, like that, literally. I remember when I was 15, that he actually took me to a gang, and he had already come out of the scene at that time, but he took me to a gang leader to say, oh, would you like to join? I was so excited. I was like, yes, it'd be nice to, you know, that's cool. I would finally get to fight for something, you know, and be part of something.
Can I just ask, what was it about the gang culture that appealed to you at that time?
I think it's watching my dad growing up, it appealed to me, because my dad always had so many people following him in and out, everything he did. And then everywhere he went, everyone was like, hey, hey, hey. And I was like, whoa, dad's someone powerful. So when I seen that, I was like, wow, that's amazing. I want to be like dad one day, you know? And obviously, because that's your upbringing, you don't know anything else. It's not like I can say I want to be the next Tony Robbins, because that's not my upbringing. I don't see that. I didn't know that was a world. But I see this as a, wow, it's inspiring to see someone so powerful, you know?
It's fascinating. So what's your parents, your siblings, the people who, you know, raised you? What are their viewpoints around the route that you have taken? Because it went, you know, you created, I've been following you since 2018 when I wanted to know what manifestation and what the, it was the law of attraction. Uh-huh. And there's the voice in my head going, you want to believe in the law of attraction, but the other voice going, yeah, but does it really exist? So I've actually been following you since then, obviously knew you under a different name. Your family have seen you grow over the decades that have been. How do they perceive what you do now, how you're referred to, the title that's been bestowed upon you, that you're effectively a chosen one? You know, what's their understanding of it now, and how's your relationship changed?
It's perfect. It's beautiful. It's the most beautiful. I'm very grateful for how everything is, actually. They're very proud parents. Yeah. The whole family is very, very proud. But it's also because I started to understand how to deal with them, how to communicate with them. Mm. I think that, like you were saying before, there would come a time where you start transitioning, moving into positivity and everything. And when you first, I don't know about you learning about law of attraction, but when I first learned about law of attraction and I finally got it, I thought I got it, I would go and try to tell everybody, hey, you should just think positive. Why you? And the moment people say, but, or however, you say, why are you saying that? You shouldn't say that. You attract that, you know? And people think you've gone crazy, you know? And that's how I was. And people don't understand it. And I think I was doing that at some point. at the beginning when I realized that there's so much resistance, you're not helping them. And I always say it's a very interesting thing when people go into the journey of positivity, because at first they try to change everyone around them. And it's interesting because you feel your positive spirit and then you feel their negative spirit. So you come in, you try to give positivity. And the interesting thing in the equation is when you come out negative.
Yep.
Because you get frustrated. You're like, oh, so who won? Actually, negative one. You didn't win. You tried to convert them. They converted you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I came to this realization when they're saying that says, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. And I said, actually, you don't need to force anything upon anybody. You don't need to try and change anybody. Mm. And this epiphany came when I actually met my first yoga master, which was actually out in Bali. And he said to me, I said to him, I said, you should come and speak at one of my events because you can change a lot of lives. And he said, I don't need to. And I said, what do you mean? But you've changed my life here. Like, I'm learning so much. You can really help people. He said, but I don't need to help people. And I was like, what do you mean? But you're helping me. He said, yeah, but you came to me.
Interesting.
And that's when the penny dropped for me, because I was like, why am I keep trying to change people? And as a result, I'm getting frustrated. If I'm frustrated and I turn negative, how can I have positivity to reach out to more people, you know? So that penny really dropped for me and I let go. And I realized when I let go and I accepted them for who they are, because I realized that everybody has their own journey. Mm. Like some people, they say, okay, like some people can look at me today and say, oh, wow, it's just so peace, like Zen or whatever. Actually, it's that comes because they say every master was once a disaster. That comes because I was once upon a time that really angry, also alpha male type character. And because it was so destructional, relationships, everything, so much argument to a point where you sit there crying, asking yourself, what is wrong with you? Banging your head off the wall. That's when you come to that awakening and saying, maybe there's something wrong with me, you know, maybe I need to do something about it.
You're so calm now, but do you ever have moments where you're stuck in traffic or something's gone wrong and you just kind of lose your cool a little bit?
I say it's like this. It's like the little bit is saying maybe a second. And I think this is the game I tell all the students to play now. I say someone can trigger you. And the average person, you say, maybe they're triggered and 3 days later, they're still talking about it. Or some people even 1 month later, still 1 year later, still talking about it. So that's the time, the trigger time now, right? It's lasted. So I say, our goal is not to say, how do you be positive all the time? Because in life is positive and negative. So it's more about that reaction. How do you minimize the time of that reaction, you know, while it's happening? So you go from that. They work on themselves. Okay, now, whenever something triggers me, I'm only upset for 1 day. Great, it's improvement. That's good. You're going in the right direction, you know? Then move to 5 hours, 3 hours, 1 hour, and then, I'm only 5 minutes now. 5 minutes agitated. That's okay. It's a human instinct. It's a response. But it's learning the protocol to, you know, in those moments. And then so now is what? It's like, okay, yes, something can happen. Then it's a practice and it's like, okay.
It's really interesting because I've always convinced myself that I learn so much from the downtimes, from the hardships, from the dark energy that I do experience from time to time if a business deal goes wrong, if there's some sort of a family emergency. Mm. And I always tend to find that I learn quite a lot about myself through those negative emotions. Mm. But really what you're saying is you can take those same learnings without having the experience of all that negative energy.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah.
Wow. See, it's fascinating because you mentioned your students. And then if we go back a step where you talked about your first yoga master and that kind of realization, the penny drop moment of you don't have to change everyone else or share it with everyone else. But obviously there is a bit of a fluctuation there because you actually do train and mentor and have your students. And you offer trainings and you offer, you know, the ability to learn what you've learned en masse. So how does that fit in? If the penny drop moment was, you know, actually, I don't need to teach. Do you believe all of your students come to you and migrate to you?
Yes, yes. I'll tell you what it is. It's actually this epiphany came from a few moments. One, the master said those words and it's like, oh, I think I get it. Didn't completely get it, but I thought I got it at that point, you know. The second thing was because 12 years ago, we set up a charity, an orphanage in Kenya. And I felt in that at that point in my life, I felt like if I can save everyone, that's my purpose. But then I realized I couldn't save everyone. Mm-hmm. And so I realized I had to not be affected by the people I cannot save, because I used to cry about it. I used to cry seeing dying babies and thinking I can't do anything about it. But coming to acceptance that everything is what it is and we do our best, that's all we can do. Yeah. That's all we can account for. So that's, again, another part of letting go. Then going into the coaching, I've been in this speaking coaching maybe 10, 11 years now. So doing a lot of the world tours and things like that and mentorships and coaching. And then realizing that I can have a group of, 10 coaching clients. And two of them will fly. They'll be like, whoa, it's like completely life changes. And, five of them will be sitting there thinking, oh, how do I do this? I can't motivate myself. You know, I know what I need to do, but I can't. That type of, you know, you have a lot of people like that too. And I used to get upset about that too, because I used to be like, you know, why can you not just get your ass moving and do something, you know? It's just, I gave you the plan already. Oh, yeah. But I can't, I don't know. I think it's my mindset. Stop thinking about your mind, just do it. That's all, you just do it. And so I used to get frustrated about that until, okay, again, I learned to just let go. And come to this point here, it's very interesting you asked this, because this, another penny dropped maybe in the past couple of years where I stopped doing the world tours. I used to do a lot of tours on the circuit, a lot of the speakers in the industry, they do this, you know, go to all these events and speak. But I realized that I stopped doing that basically. And we built a center here. We got about 8,500 square feet, so it's quite big. And I said, I'm just going to sit inside my center. I'm most comfortable there. It's my home. And I'm not, it's not like I need to go out to find clients. So why do I need to go out at all if I'm most comfortable here? I'm naturally an introvert, so going out to meet people still till today still freaks me out, because I'm like, oh, I don't know what to talk about.
But it's so eloquent.
No, but it's not, I don't know what to talk about. It's actually because my nature is like, my idea of hanging out, having a good time would be if we just sit, I don't know, we can still eat, but we don't, like, if we don't talk, we don't talk. It's not a problem. But it's just that society's not like that this way. They're scared of silence.
We'll work for a podcast.
No, I understand. In podcasts, we have to speak. But I'm just saying, like, outside of it, you know, it's like that. I mean, people speak about so much nonsense these days. Like, you go to meet some, I could just go to work and then someone's like, hey, how are you? I'm like, but you see me just before, how am I? I'm always good. You know, I'm always good. Why you ask that question? Like, it's not like you really, but it's just something you need to say. You feel you need to say. It's like when you, if you ever have friends over and then they stay over at your place and then you wake up in the morning, what's the first thing they'll say to you? Oh, did you sleep well? Is it, you don't really care if I slept well. If I said no, what are you going to do? Give me a new pillow or cushion. Well, it's just something that, hey, the weather is good. It's like one of those things, you know?
It's so British. It's like Tourette's when you get in a taxi as well. Oh, what time are you on to? Nobody actually cares, you know?
I'll tell you something. It's different. How I see it now is I get to be a bit of a diva. I know that. It's because, but I've put in the hard work for that, you know? It's been how many years now in this industry? Going out there, going to networking events and playing that game that everybody plays, and you know how it is in networking events. You know, hey, I like that shirt you're wearing. No, you don't. You just, what do you, okay, give me your card. Do you understand what I'm saying? No, you don't. It's, hey, I like your hair today. It's like, what? It's a lot of this nonsense, and people feel the need to do all of that. And I understand it. I respect it. I get it. And once upon a time, I had to go out and know how to do that too. But I just find it not so real.
Mm-hmm.
And now I can say that, okay, I have created this quite a big following, I would say, for my message, and people who want to listen and come, you know, come listen. Otherwise, actually, I'm very happy just sitting by myself, you know, it's just like that.
You know, what's really interesting when you were talking, one of my first mentors was giving me some advice around marketing. And whilst all the gurus were talking about doing all these outbound DMs and messages and hustling and going to all these networking events, which is common practice, he said you need to be the lighthouse. You need to stand tall. You need to shine bright. Be the attraction. People will know what you do and they will come towards you. Don't be the tugboat that's constantly pushing and pulling and trying to attract that energy. And initially for the real estate business, it was LinkedIn I was using as my primary platform. So I realized very quickly nobody cared about interest rates or pensions or any of the other standard generic posts other people were doing. Instead, I just started talking about values, who I was, challenges that I'd overcame. And we raised £4 million within our first year from a standing start with no track record, just by being the lighthouse and going against...
But that is law of attraction, is it not?
Yeah.
When you let go, you let in, you know?
Yeah.
But that's hard to teach someone who doesn't understand it. So is your mission or is your aim for people to... Because obviously I followed you in the days of the law of attraction. What's your thoughts around it now? Do you still believe that you need to get the message out there? Do you believe when people come to you, because you believe people will come to you when they're ready, you know, you're now the master, they are the student.
So every day we create content. We put many content out, maybe at least 3-4 videos a day, every single day for the past 5-6 years it's been that way. So that's what I do. That's what we do. And the people will see it. And the people who are interested, they will eventually either come through a virtual event or come to the center. But I like to keep everything very real, very. So, you know, so sometimes we have some students, they come in, they say, just like this, they say, "Master, I don't know what it is. I have this goal. I know what I need to do, but I can't do it." And I say, "Then don't do it." And then they sit there for a while. They're like, why is he telling me not to do it? I said, don't do it. If you say you can't do it, then just don't do it. I mean, what do you expect me to say? You just told me you can't do it. You expect me to say you can do it. Why? I mean, it's too obvious, you know? Like, you need to figure out yourself. Some people say, "Oh, I don't know why I'm going through this relationship. It's really toxic, but I can't get out of it." I said, then stay in it. Because my belief is this, is that, look, you already know the answer. A lot of them, they know the answer. If I'm in a toxic relationship, what I'm sure you're supposed to get out. You know, you want to hear that from me. But actually, if I said to you today, I said, then get out of it. It's not likely they're going to go home and get out of it. Because what I say is, you will stay in that situation until you no longer want to stay in that situation, you will move out of that situation and it will happen organically. So I give them that first. I just say, you just do you. Go through the challenges, go through the problems, because the problem is people think they're going through pain, but the pain isn't big enough. And they don't realize that. They think it's pain, but the pain isn't big enough. When the pain is big enough, you're going to get out of it. You're not going to come to a monthly satsang to come sit here and ask me how to get out of it. You're going to be out of there, you know? And I think that there's a saying that says the biggest enemy of a great life is a good life.
Yeah, it's true.
And I think this is the problem. A lot of people, they think they're living a bad life, but actually it's pretty good and it's comfort. So they don't do anything about it. So I think that I don't need to try so hard anymore, because I come to acceptance that, you know, if you've got a better question for me, if you're asking me how to do something, I can break it down for you. If you're saying you can't do something, just don't do it. You know, it doesn't bother me that you don't do it, because I know that's the natural life path is that you will go through something and you will think it's tough. When it goes really, really tough, you will bounce out yourself. So I know that is how it works. So this spiritual teaching it's not saying I no longer teach law of attraction. Of course, I will still convey, okay, be positive, you attract positivity. But it's really, it's like, took this stress load that I used to carry on behalf of all the students, and it's just dropped it on the floor and said that, I can now be an observer. Some things are good, some things are bad, but nothing will affect me because I need to keep my peace. If I don't keep my peace, how can I make a difference in this world? So that's how I see it now.
It's that whole adage, isn't it? You can't pour from an empty cup. But so many people, I think, are programmed to believe that success looks a certain way, only to find that they've had their ladder against the wrong wall, as you did for a while, because you had the financial success, you had the material trappings, yet you got to a point in your life where you actually felt it would have been better not to be here.
It can get quite, quite dark places it can go to, but it's supposed to be there, you know, and I think that. When you touch on that point, it's very important, I believe, for people who are in that dark place to understand that in existence there is always positive and negative. There is always these two things in existence. What does that mean if they are going through a challenge right now, whether it's depression, which is what I would class I was going through. Mm-hmm. Or even suicidal thoughts. Like, we get people who message every day saying they have suicidal thoughts. Is to know that there is light. There definitely is light on the other side. And it's important for people to, you know, it's hard when you're in that situation to have a mind that's open because you're so fixated on all the problems and all the darkness that's happening in your life. But just because I've been through it, I know that as long as you can have a glimpse of light, a glimpse of hope that you start bringing your attention to, that can expand and you can completely change your life around. And I think it's a very important point for people who are going through any depression or thoughts like that, you know, to feel free to go out to reach for help. Mm. You know, I had to go take what I was going through and speak to some people about it. And although 90% of it, I wasn't receiving it very well, because people would say, you've got the perfect life. And I'm like, no, I don't, you know, but they don't understand my thoughts in that moment. But because of that, just that 5-10%, which I was still absorbing, that gave me that glimpse of light to actually do something about it and get out of it, you know?
It's really interesting because I resonate with what you're saying so much. Back in 2008, I was very depressed, heavily medicated, anxiety, depression, postnatal depression, you name your flavour of depression, panic attacks, like literally laid in the fetal position, somebody's unable to leave the house. And my definition of success at that time was just to achieve some sort of financial pressure. I was claiming benefits. It was quite a dark time. So I got myself educated in real estate. We had a flying start. We bought 2 properties within 4 days of completing the training, even though we didn't actually have any capital ourselves. And I got to a certain point of a certain amount of properties that had been the goal, that financial freedom that I'd been craving. And I realised I felt just as empty and just as hollow as I had before, only there was a lot less sympathy, if you like, even towards myself, because when my life wasn't going very well, I knew why I was feeling depressed. I knew why I was feeling anxious. But when I resolved those issues materialistically and then still had those overwhelming feelings, that's when I started to look a lot deeper into what does a successful life actually mean? You know, what's my purpose? What's my mission? There has to be more than just the financial trappings.
I really resonate with that. Because my transformation happened in Kenya. And I think it was a godsend. It was a very interesting situation because I was depressed. I felt I had suicidal thoughts every day. I would have it, but I didn't have the guts to do it myself. You know, I look up and I say, "Take my life away, please." You know, and every day I would do that. And then some girl was doing some performance at one of my restaurants, and then she said she needs to leave very quickly, and then she said she'd go to Kenya. And I said, why are you going to Kenya? She said, have some kids. She said, you want to come? That's all that happened. And I feel that was like an angel in disguise. It was like godsend, you know? And the other thing that linked is so unpredictable, because I said, no, I would not go to Kenya. I was depressed or stressed. Why do I want to go there? And because I went out drinking with my friends that night, and I said to them, there's this girl who asked me to go to Kenya with her. Ha, ha, ha. They said, don't go. It's very dangerous. And I just heard dangerous, and I was like, I'm supposed to go there. So strange. Imagine I go to Kenya to in hope that I'm finished. I'll be finished there. And then I go there, and what I see is I see these kids playing around, and this old lady cheering in the background, and really happy, and no food, no clothes, no nothing, and mud huts. And I just burst into tears, and I'm like, they must know something I don't know, you know? So it's interesting, because it's been 12, that's why every year we take volunteers out there, because I want people to experience it. I want people to see it. Perspective is a big, you learn so much from perspective, you know? Mm. And a lot of the time today, I mean, these kids, they're really fully grown now, a lot taller than me. And it's funny, because a lot of these kids, they say, thank you, if it wasn't you for you, I wouldn't be alive today. And what they don't know is, if it wasn't for them, I wouldn't be alive today, you know? Because they saved me as much as you know, I saved them. And I think, you know, there's a saying that says, giving is living. And I feel that is our highest purpose. It's like what you're doing now. I don't think you already... go through another depression or anything anymore, because you are fulfilling something that's beyond you right now. Mm-hmm. Yourself is fulfilled. You have whatever finances and whatever in your life, that's fulfilled. When that is fulfilled for people, and that was my problem when I was 25, 26, because I felt like I had everything, you know, but I didn't know what the thing that was missing was. Mm. And that is a sense of purpose.
Yeah.
And where does sense of purpose come from? It comes from doing something that's beyond yourself, contributing beyond yourself. And everybody knows it, actually, because they've experienced it before. When you do something for yourself, you're happy. But sometimes when you do something for other people and you see the other people get the results, you're even more happy. It already gives you a hint that there's a secret in life, in service, you know. But at the same time, though, and this is a big message for people who are following my work online, because I attract a lot of spiritual people. Mm-hmm. And I see it actually as a slightly different problem going on, is because the spiritual people, they come in and they say, yeah, I just want to help the world. I want to save the world. I want to give the world. And I'm like, yeah, but you know, you need to, why don't you become financially free first? And people are like, what do you mean? It's almost spirituality. I'm like, yeah, but do you know why you're not rallying for world peace right now? Because you're stuck in your job. Mm-hmm. You know, do you know why? You say, oh no, all I want is world peace. So what are you going to do about it? You know, and then I always joke about this, but you know, we get a lot of very spiritual woo-woo people and I'm going to heal the world, send healing to the world. I'm like, dude, that kid out there just needs some food right now. And if you got some money and pay for the food, they'll be alive. So, you know, I think that the message is very simple for me. I know why everything happened in my life. I went from a very materialistic world to taking a 180 flip to being a complete spiritual woo-woo tree hugger, giving person, to then realizing that, hey, wait there a second, we are spirits in this human form. We are metaphysical and physical. We should be doing the both. So it's easy what my message is today. I come to a place like Dubai where it's all bling, 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 bling. Mm. But I mean, all you need to watch is an episode of Dubai Bling and you know that there is a lot of emptiness happening, because there's a lot of nonsense. They need love and they need purpose. They need love, healing, purpose. So we come in here, we know this place could do with that. But at the same time, we attract the spiritual crowd, and we know what they need is actually financial education. Because I'm saying, hey, if you sort out your physical, you will have the capacity to go and fulfill your spiritual purpose, you know?
Do you believe that's part of your mission then, and part of your purpose is to kind of showcase the balance? Because when you're saying this...
That's 100% my message, and that will 100% continue to be my message moving through. Because how anyone finds their message is you look at your track history, you look at your downs, your lows, you look at your challenges, you'll know why God, universe put you in those situations, to bounce out of those situations, because... And that's how you turn your mess into your message. Mm-hmm. So your message will be different to my message. Your message will be different to my message, you know? But there's a reason. My purpose is that. I know it's that. And so I will do... And it's interesting because it's a controversial topic.
Absolutely.
When you talk spiritual... Yeah, spiritual person always talking about money. You're not spiritual, right? These days I'm like, you know, I used to get affected by that. But now... I don't care what you say, because the person who's saying it, the reality is, the person who's saying anything about money is broke.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's true, right? We were hosting an event the other day. It was very interesting because Neha was on stage, and then she was saying, okay, cool. So by the way, just want to say, those of you who have got the VIP passes, then you guys can ask the questions and things like that. During a break session, what happened was somebody actually went up to her and just said, by the way, that was very disrespectful. Are you looking down on the general ticket people and, you know, classifying them as whatever, right? Politely is, okay, I'm sorry it hurt your feelings. But the reality is, it's pretty much very certain that that person is broke. Mm-hmm. And inclusive of everybody hearing this podcast right now, there's going to be at least 50% of the people will be triggered by that word, you are broke. And who are the people who are triggered by that? The people who are broke. Mm-hmm. I always laugh about this because I say, if you trigger people, right, people say, oh, this, I trigger people. If you see something surfacing, that's what you need to change, because that's within you, that's a problem.
I find it fascinating. And do you believe that you have to experience both, i.e. experience the spirituality experience? Do you believe you've got to have been broke to understand it? Because this reminds me of one of my first mentors. He was, still is to this day, one of the most giving, supportive. His mission was to help and support people, but he was broke. Okay. He was paying, he set up a school in Rwanda. Mm-hmm. He was paying for credit cards. He got stuck there, couldn't get his flight home. Mm-hmm. And that was the turning point for him to realize you can be both a capitalist or a materialistic person, because you can't pour from an empty cup. Mm-hmm. But then the dichotomy is, everyone knows him for spiritual woo-woo, feed the world, heal the world, but here you are selling training courses, mentoring people. How do you believe you need to experience both? Can you turn someone who is fully materialistic right now into someone who's spiritual and find the balance? How do you do it?
It's a journey. It's not going to be easy at all. It's definitely a journey, because I went through the journey myself, so I know. You know, I thought material was a thing. That was conditioning. That's not because, I was born that way. It's because my dad said to me, you got no academic, and how are you going to be successful in life? Success is about, you need to make money and you'll be successful, you know? So that was my idea. So when I made money, that was the problem, because it was like, sorry, I'm supposed to be, what's the success again? What does this mean? I'm supposed to be happy or something? So linking material to happiness doesn't work. Then linking this love, just love, to happiness actually is very tough. It's very tough because we are living in a material world. Mm. And this is what today I would say I don't get for the spiritual people. But back then when I was the spiritual side, I didn't get myself. But I don't get what they don't get, that you are a material, living a material world, wearing materials, living in material. Mm-hmm. And you're saying money isn't important. It's like, wait there a second. Mm-hmm. Which part do you not get that money is important? I always say to people, it's interesting, because if I have a crowd of 1,000 people, I say, how many of you think money is not important? You'll always get a few hands. Always, every time. And I always say to all the people with their hands up, I say, okay, if you guys just stand up, and then please take all of your money and please donate it to our charity, please. And they're like, I say, so why are you saying no? Because 2 seconds ago, you told me it's not important. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I totally get it. Having been on the brink of bankruptcy on multiple occasions, having watched my parents go from beautiful, big detached house, 5-star holidays, to literally having bailiffs at the door to repossess or items, I can honestly say that no amount of positivity of law of attraction is going to work when you can't pay the bills. You can be doing all the affirmations you want, but when those red letters come in and you're worried about losing your home and feeding your children, there's a real sort of disconnect. And it was interesting because before we hit record, we were talking about what kind of podcast this is. It's really quite hard to pigeonhole because I just speak to interesting people who I think can add value to the listeners. We've had billionaires on, we've had best-selling authors on, we've had people talking about consciousness, about spirituality, about breath work, all the things I'm kind of interested in because I think they're really important. And I have some people saying, well, I follow you for the business content, but I'm not so keen on the woo-woo. I have other people who are like, I love it when you talk about connection and consciousness, but I'm not really interested in the more capitalist side of it. And really, I suppose I'm a hybrid myself. You know, I'm an entrepreneur. I enjoy making money. And when you make more, you can contribute more as well.
No, I think it's beautiful what you're doing because you are putting out you. And that is the truth. You know, it's influencer world these days is a tough one, you know?
Yeah.
Because, as you grow, your following grows, your fans grow, your haters grow.
Yeah.
And it takes a strong spirit to do something like that, you know? And I think a lot of people don't recognize that actually, if it was for money or finances, then we would probably do something that's easier than need to do something that gets criticized every single day.
Yeah.
We would just do it behind the scenes and not even tell anybody. Why would we bother? Just so that you can go and judge and hate, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I think that a lot of people, when they are voicing anything, I don't agree with this, then that's your problem. I don't like it when you talk about that. Well, if you don't like and you're getting triggered by it, it's your problem.
Mm.
I don't like when you talk about what is your problem. Everything they don't like is their problem, and they're not recognizing that right now. They see it as it's your problem,
yeah,
right, for speaking about it. But it's not. It's their problem. And that's why, actually, in my message today, I become... When we talk about the Himalayas, the training with the spiritual master, actually, one of the big things was, aside from all the awakening and third eye things, but one of the big things was actually mental strength. What we had to do in the heat, what we had to do in the cold, in the mountains, was just crazy.
Can you expand a little bit on that?
Totally intrigued by this.
Just like, for example, crossing your legs over in lotus pose and throwing yourself in the river Ganges where it's fast flowing and there's rocks everywhere and you're not breathing and you like feel like drowning. We had to do so many weird activities like that. And I thought it was weird at the time because I was like, why is he getting me to do all of this? Like, I feel like I'm going to die soon. And I realized that the master can see, because of their level of consciousness and awareness, they can see your weaknesses that you cannot see yourself. And your blind spots. And I never owned up to this before. Right before 2019, but when it got to 2019, I'll tell you one thing that I was actually internally struggling with that nobody ever knew about, even till today. I never told anybody. Right, was I couldn't deal with the negativity online, and that's a quite interesting thing because I had already accumulated. I think it was just under a million subscribers on YouTube. Well, a million following online. Right. So imagine I would have so many people just every single day gratitude. Thank you, Master. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Just thank you, nonstop, thank you. And then I would find myself waking up in the morning scrolling, and I wouldn't even know. I would live this pattern. I'm scrolling until I find that negativity. And I'm like, ooh, why you say that about me? You know?
We literally had this conversation yesterday. There can be 100 good comments. We hone in on the bad comment.
Yeah.
It's interesting how much we fear things like that and how much we get affected by things like that. And so I found I was living that. And do you know what? I had my unconscious way of copping out. And what I would tell people at that time was, I'd tell people, I feel like I've fulfilled my mission and I've helped enough people now. And I don't think I'm going to continue doing this anymore. And I think that I've done what I needed to do.
Mm-hmm.
that's what I used to try and explain myself in, like a cop-out of, I'm going to stop doing this now. Mm. Stop tours, stop speaking, stop trying to educate people, stop doing that. And the most interesting thing was when I said that for the first time, about 3 months later was when I got the message from the disciple to say, go into the mountains.
Interesting.
It's so fascinating how the things unfold. And then when I went through the mountains, I was going through all this vigorous training and then saying, no fear, and then just push through and all this type of stuff, building this body strength, mental strength, spiritual strength. They say, how you do anything, how you do everything. Mm-hmm. And I was building this strength. And afterwards, I realized I came back. I didn't even know that had changed until after maybe 3 to 6 months of being back home, and I'm pushing like I've never pushed before, even more content out there.
Yeah.
And I'm no longer looking at that. And when anybody feeds back to me, says, oh, somebody said this, I'm just like, so what? Why are you telling me that? And then an epiphany came a few months later thinking, wait there a second, when did I change? How did I change?
So it wasn't a conscious thing. It was an after the event, you've realized that part of you's kind of
that was
disappeared.
Part of the training.
Yeah.
I didn't know Grandmaster had trained me up for this thing. And not just that, actually. The other thing is because after the training, because of the whole third eye, seeing future thing and everything, I could see my full life purpose. To the day I die, I could see my full life purpose, what I'm supposed to achieve. So now I am completely, completely congruent to who I am, what I'm supposed to do, and there's no question about it. I think maybe until 2019, I sometimes will still question, am I supposed to be teaching law of attraction, or am I supposed to be teaching business? Because people don't like it when I teach business and law of attraction. They say it's mm-hmm. not right. Spiritual people should not teach. You know?
Yeah.
So I used to be like that. But then because now I know exactly the reason for it, that's why I'm very clear. I say nobody could ever say anything. I mean, people can say, you're not spiritual. I don't care. People can say, you don't have money. It's like, I don't care, because you have a problem with that, not me.
Yeah.
So now I'm very congruent. I know exactly what it is. I don't know if you guys, have you ever heard of the name Osho?
No.
Spiritual leader back in the day, about, I don't know how many, 30 something years ago. There's a show on Netflix. It's called Wild, Wild Country, I think. Yeah. And basically, he was a spiritual guru who was very controversial at the time, because what did he do? He introduced around 30, 40 years ago, he introduced sex into the spirituality thing. So he was just saying how sex is okay and everyone can have sex, it's normal and that type of thing, which then was a bit of a taboo thing, you know, you're spiritual, how dare you speak about this? Mm-hmm. And then what happened is even till the day he died, yes, people were listening to his message, but it was still controversial around the world, you know. Now his books sell in millions and millions and millions, you know. And that at that time, the shift of human consciousness was about bringing, I guess, making sex okay, because we're humans, it's a thing. This next shift of consciousness, which is very clear to me, is bringing money into the equation. And I don't know if you guys have realized this, but I see it, how now you get a lot of entrepreneurs coming on the scene. Like if you go 10, 15 years back, you wouldn't see this. But now you see a lot of entrepreneurs coming in saying, heart-based entrepreneur,
yep.
Spiritpreneur, yogipreneur, all of these types of things where people are saying, oh, you need to lead with love. Even if you look at just Gary Vee alone, you look at how his message has evolved.
Yeah. Huge.
If you did like 7 years ago, it's all F you. Now it's kind of like, you just gotta have compassion, right?
Yeah.
So what this new shift is happening is it's bringing love, consciousness, or you can use the word spirituality, into entrepreneurship. Mm. And it's also bridging the gap between entrepreneurship and the spiritual world as well, like money. And so when I was very clear that is my message, that's what the world needs right now. And that's why I play a role, because my history already shows me that was the two things I struggled with, you know? So now it's very clear. And my question was, how do I get that message out there, right? In 2019, it was, how do I get that message out there without triggering and getting haters? Now it's like, actually, I realize it doesn't matter anymore. Mm. So that's why it's like, okay, buy an orange Lamborghini, put it behind you, call yourself the yogi with the Lamborghini, in front of it, the moment they get the click, come in, come here, let me teach you self-love. Because that's not what you need.
Yeah. What's the saying? Sell them what they want, give them what they need. But absolutely. One of my old mentors as well, he told me, regardless of your sector, you're a marketer first and everything else second. Mm. Because the more people know who you are, the more opportunities you create to make an impact.
Yeah, it is. I mean, because there's so much going on in media right now, if you really want to get your message out there, you've got to use disruptive marketing.
Mm, yeah.
You have to do something. But then people, you know, if anybody's not doing disruptive marketing, I'll tell you what it is. It's fear.
Yeah.
They wouldn't like to hear, no, I'm just being myself. No, if you want to get your message out there, you got to be disruptive. And if you're not being disruptive right now, it's because you have a fear of being disruptive.
Yeah.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
I mean, fear with the repercussions of it. Yeah. Fear of judgment, isn't it?
Exactly. I mean, you look at last year, Andrew Tate.
Yeah.
You can love him or hate him or whatever, but he's a genius.
He's a genius.
And everyone's got an opinion about him, which is exactly what you want. He's not vanilla. You love him or you hate him. There's no in between.
And everyone's talking about him. Mission accomplished. What are your thoughts on Andrew Tate?
He's a genius. I just think he's a genius. He's a marketing genius. And I think there's things for everybody to learn from that marketing genius. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Especially for those who have a positive message. Then you just need to be observing. Why this person you saying you hate is getting more traction than you? Like, you know, you class yourself as an influencer or somebody who wants to reach out to people and help people. So I think it's genius. Even a lot of YouTubers these days, I always say it, like people look at, you heard of Mr. Beast?
Yes.
It's like Mr. Beast, people think, oh, he's stupid. Look at these stupid videos. He donates more money to charity than probably you ever will in your whole entire life. And he earns more than every single one of you who are hating on or whatever.
As does Andrew Tate, interestingly, as well.
Yeah.
You look at it, so I've got young children, they're almost 13 and 9, and they look at the listings of YouTubers, who's got the highest hits, who's got the biggest subscribers, and they had a realisation that in the top 5, they're all making an absolute shed load of money, but how many people are they helping? Yeah. It's all about impact, isn't it? How many lives you can touch. And so if we kind of come full circle back to you've been bestowed with the title of master, someone was, you know, a disciple was sent for you. Mm. What's the ascension for you? Can you become a grandmaster? What's the protocol? Do you have rules to live by? Or you can't?
There's quite a lot of, I wouldn't call it rules.
It's protocol.
Protocols that, it's not a must, but because you know the reason behind each protocol, you know the benefit of each protocol, you will follow the protocol. You know, it's like,
are you able to share some of that with us?
Well, I mean, obviously the a lot of diet protocols will be there. So we don't eat onion, garlic, we don't eat meat, we don't eat egg. There's a lot of things like that, but that's to preserve our energy and it's also to heighten our intuition and things like that. Mm-hmm. There's obviously a lot of protection shields that will be created. I think we talked a little bit about it. Like everywhere we go, there will be a protocol of how many people are around and protecting the energies and things like that. Because again, I'll give it in a very simple context, right? Around 11 years ago, when I first started running live events, you have a crowd of, let's say, 100 people. And back then I would think, okay, I try to help as many people as possible. So what happened is we would have a breaks and you have lunch times. During breaks and lunch time, I'll come off the stage and I'll talk to everybody. And then what would happen after every 3-day event? I would crash. Mm-hmm. I'll be off for at least 3-4 days. I'll be don't nobody speak to me. I'm done, right? Until I realized that you have to set some boundaries and set some parameters, and setting them some boundaries to the commoner could seem like, oh, he's really arrogant. Look at him. Don't speak to us. No. If I said that, I can preserve my energy and I can recharge. Every time I come up on stage, I'm best.
Serve better.
Yeah. So if I use that as a context, then the question comes, how about my everyday life? So there's a very strict protocols that we'll be having, whether we're traveling or whatever, and Neha will organize for that. Like sometimes we'll have some students who are big extroverts, which is not a problem. I respect extroverts. It's amazing. You know, you talk a lot. Great.
Don't know what you mean.
Taking that.
But usually if she identifies the the extroverts, usually if we're going on any travel trip or any retreat or anything like that, they will not be organized in the same car as me. Because you know what will happen, I'll just sit down and blah, 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 blah. And then by the end, I'm like, okay, I need to go for my interview. And my mind's already consumed by a million things. How can you be intuitive, or how can you, when you're just consumed with everybody else's problems? So that type of protection boundaries in the protocols are there.
Can I just pick up on that point there? Because we were talking about Gary Vee earlier, and one of the things that he used to say historically is that he was sort of famous for replying to every single tweet at one point. Whereas actually, if you stand back and assess that's probably not the best way to preserve your mental energy. To get the best out of me, to get the best content, the best impact, I need to not be involved at that. I'm not going to outsource it to a PA or a virtual assistant or anything like that. But really the message that I'm trying to put out was on one to many. And I found that I was becoming quite stressed at the task of having to reply to each and every person. So,
But I think it's a part of the journey, because it's everybody who's grown something online the first few years, I think you have to do that. You know, it's like, because you probably don't even have a big team yet or anything like that. So it's different.
Do you think it's a bit of a rite of passage? You've got to go through that, you know, before you can be the person, because I deliver public speaking training, some of them are 4-day and 5-day events.
Yeah.
And because my need was to help and to serve, that was me. Every break, every lunchtime, extra time replying to messages. Yeah. And it was renowned that, like, my husband would not speak to me the day. It's like someone's pulled the plug out of you. You've literally need to recharge. Mm-hmm. And so setting those boundaries, but it's the difficulty of everyone's been so used to being able to talk to you, to speak to you, and then you have that kind of, you've changed, yes, and it's for your benefit. How do you, you know, is it the people who are on the journey with you who are understanding that? Are you quite comfortable now to say, well, it's self-selection? If you don't like that, you know, off you go. You seem like really at peace with the fact that your people will come to you when it's the right time for them. And you know, if people like you or dislike you, that's a true reflection of them. So if that's the case, being in the role that you are, being spiritual as you are and making an impact in people's lives, how do you do that on a grander scale? Do you remove yourself a little bit more because people want and need you more then? It's very true that takeaway selling works, but you're still giving a lot on social media. You still give a lot of content.
Yeah. Actually, it's the context, the protocol is set, but I will always be available for the people. So it's like, I will always, let's give you this example. Neha books out my whole schedule every single day. So there's no rest. Every day, this meeting, then recording, then going there, doing this, and then until the time I sleep. So every single day will be on repeat. So my thing is, okay, in every moment, how can I be loving and how can I be compassionate? So if there's a student here and they say, oh, I want help or whatever, okay, let's do some healing. Let's do this. Okay, let's do that. Okay, let's have a chat. Let's answer your question. So this is my thing. I can be completely genuine in opening up to that. But she has a task, which is to say, oh, Master, you have another meeting. So I'm like, okay, I need to go to another meeting, you know, but I want to. So that is the best way for me. And the reason that's the best way for me, because I'm one of those soft-hearted people that it's good that, and this is a very interesting thing, because now we're talking about a bit spiritual, a bit business, these two things, but I'm not very good at
saying no.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, I'm not very good at saying no. I'm not very good at business. I'm not very good at finances or managing finances. Like if it was me, actually, I would give everyone everything for free, which is quite interesting, because then the question is, okay, so how does your organization generate millions, right? But it's because I know myself well enough after so many years of, I mean, I've been through all that bailiffs and everything, and not just once and twice and three times. I've been through that many times, and to a point where I'm like, oh, why can't I sort out my finances? I'm just not good at money management. I need to learn money management. But I realized that my spirit is my archetype is very different. My archetype is I'm a free spirit type of person. I'm a creative. I'm a You know, I'm that type of person. So if you left it to me, actually, I would just be like, yeah, we just talk all day long and let's give all of you healing, all queue up and give healing. And at the end of it, I'll be looking at my pocket and thinking, oh, I don't know how I'm going to survive, you know?
Yeah.
But when I realized that around maybe five, seven years ago, I realized that I should not be the CEO of my company. I should not be the CFO of my company.
Yeah.
So I hire those people in and I find those people and they run it. And since then you start saying, ooh, there's millions there. Yeah. And what do I get to do? I don't have to create my boundaries because to me, I'm saying, I want to help you all. Mm-hmm. Let's do it. Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it. They are now seeing what the paper and the numbers and saying, no, wait, you got to do this.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay. And by the way, it's a very interesting thing because one is like a left brain, one is a right brain, one is a creative, one is a logic. If I class myself as a creative flow person, and I don't know if you experience this too, whichever side you're on, and then you are working with the other side sometimes triggers you a lot because you're like, you don't want them to stop you or you don't want them to restrict. Yep. Why are you saying like, you know, and I used to have that conflict until now I learned to appreciate that this very logical minded person who's giving you all the details is helping you. Mm-hmm. And this is what you're missing. So just do as you're told. Yeah. So now I also do as I told, you know, there.
Isn't the phrase, if you want to grow, you've got to let go.
Yeah,
you've got to let go of all of the stuff that you're not really good at. Ellie and I are really similar in that we say that we are the faces of our business. We're the ones out there, we're the ones talking. But let's be honest, the reason our portfolios are so big and the reason there is money in the bank account to pay for all of these things is because we don't try and manage the money and we don't try and organise things because it's just not within your flow. It's just not what you're great at. But that's a hard lesson quite often. And, you know, the biggest growth is usually when you learn to let go. So for those people who are thinking, how do I become that person? Because you seem like such a well-rounded, the most chilled, but you've shared the highs and the lows. So if you were giving advice to listeners who are now thinking, that's me, I've got zero in the bank account, I've got zero in the spirituality account, which do I focus on first?
I don't think it's really a first, but I do say that money is very important. Mm. So when you handle money, I feel like you have to look. I think everyone should get good at sales, which is purely just communication. That's mm-hmm. all it is. If you say you're an effective communicator, you're good at sales. That is one skill that you will never fear lack of finances ever again in your life. It doesn't matter if your business collapses. It doesn't matter if you lose your product. It doesn't matter what happens. If you have one skill, only one skill, you will never struggle with money ever again. And that is the skill of sales. So I'd say everybody should learn that skill of sales, get good at the game of sales. Because even if you don't have a product, someone else has a product and you can still make money then. Mm-hmm. When you get good at that, and that doesn't mean, oh, but I'm not the salesperson. I don't want to be that all my life. No. If you're good at it, how about you do it for 3 months, 6 months, 1 year? How about you just religiously do it for 6 months, 1 year? Bring in some capital. Now, know thyself. Know who you are. You're good at this. You're not good at this, right? Mm-hmm. So do what you do best. Outsource the rest. And how do you outsource now? Now you have money because you did sales. Mm-hmm. Now use the money. Outsource. Hand it over to other people, the professionals, to do the other parts that you're not so good at. So then what do? Then now you just sacrifice 1 year. That's all. After that year, you get to be yourself. Is it like now? I get to just be myself. You know, mm-hmm. you say, chilled and whatever. Actually, I know behind the scenes it's not chilled. You know, there's a lot of things that is going on. Yeah. There's a lot of calculation. Everything is like that, you know? And then it's like it's funny because I see that these attributes in the team. And a lot of the time when I run events, I see that the team are sitting on the edge of the seat thinking, what's he going to say now? What's he going to promise now? It happens a lot. And they get it. What's he going to promise now? What's he going to promise now? Every single time they know I'm going to pull off something. And do you know what? When I see them on the edge of the seat, it kind of like, it reminds me something. It's like, wait, okay, not too much. Right? It's like that. It's like we had quite a few times actually, because last year we started some, a few NFT projects, launching digital assets. Now we're entering into the metaverse and work like that, creating like a yoga retreat inside there. Mm. And And when we started in there, because it's so unregulated, there's a lot of scams happening, a lot of people hacking wallets and all the rest of it. So a lot of our community members, they obviously a lot of them made a lot of money, but there's some people who also got hacked and stuff. And it's very interesting because every time we go on a call and someone says, "Oh, Master, I got my wallet hacked." I'm like, "I told you, don't give away your secret. Like, don't. Why did you? Oh yeah, I forgot. Is that, what do you mean you forgot? You just lost all your money." And then I'll be there. I'll be there. Now my this is my mum's side, right, which is of me, comes out, the caring mother, you know. I'm just like, okay, so how many tokens did you lose? And then now the team's like, what's he gonna say, don't do it, you know. I said, how many tokens, what tokens are they? Okay, 15,000. Okay, Neha, if you can organize from my wallet, just send 15,000 tokens over, please don't do it again, you know. And imagine that happens through like maybe 5-6 months of our beginning, because our community is new to NFT, so they keep getting hacked, right? So five, six months. Imagine every time I go onto a community call, I'm doing the same thing. I go, oh, how much is that? 4,000? Okay, so Gawain, if you can. And then everyone's like, don't do it. And then after like 4 or 5 months, so our CEO sits down with me, says, okay, so this is how much is in from NFTs. So this is how much you have gave out, okay? Because if you keep doing this, then we will no longer be able to sustain. So you need to stop doing this.
Okay. Until the next time.
and then the next time, but it's this thing, you know, it just, next time happens. And it's true. Next time happens. It's like, oh, so how much have you lost? I said, 7,000. Okay. So in my mind, I was calculating. I was like, okay, so maybe we just send them 3 tokens. In my mind, discounts a bit. It's like, maybe then I won't get told off, you know, so.
Push the boundaries, but just enough.
But it's good, and I respect that. I know that I need that. If they weren't there, seriously, I really believe I won't have a business, really.
It is so true as well. I know just online, when I started building a bit of a presence, so many people were reaching out, asking for help and support, and that nurturing side of me wanted to give and help. And I was jumping on Zooms. Everybody wants to pick your brains for free. Generally, people who don't support you or engage with your content as well, just on a side note. And I would find I was jumping on call after call after call. And then my husband, who's also my business partner, would say at the end of the day, what have you achieved? What have you done to kind of move the needle forward? And I'm kind of like, literally spent 10 hours just giving away my time for free at the detriment to my own business. And it was a very similar conversation. He says, look, this is not sustainable. And that's actually one of the reasons why I launched the podcast, so I could start talking on a one-to-many basis to maximize the value I was giving as well, but also for a bit of self-preservation.
You still do mentorship now, coaching now?
Tony does more than me.
Yeah.
So I was just putting out free content online just to build the brand initially for the property business, which I'm not very operational now. It was to, the more people who know who you are, the more opportunities you create for them to do business with you. And our business model revolved around private finance. So it was just putting myself out there. But I just found that it was really interesting because we didn't have much of a track record and I didn't want to tell any lies. I started to talk about the things I'd experienced in, like trying to scale a business while being present for my 3 young children, and the conflict of emotions, talking about how I'd managed to overcome depression and life hacks that I'd sort of learned along the way. And again, that's where my definition of success started to change, because I would get people inboxing me, telling me that a video I'd put out there or a post I'd done had actually stopped them from taking their own life. It had given them hope, or perhaps given them the confidence to go for a job that they didn't think they were capable of, and then they'd got it. And I just started to, you know, I just thought I was a capitalist, and I started to realise that actually the money in the bank, as it is important, obviously, wasn't the driver that got me out of bed in the morning. Mm-hmm. And it's, I suppose, without doing it through a coaching or mentoring way, which I've always just been a little bit wary about getting into. I don't know why, but for me, the podcast and being able to kind of build the brand and share the content, and it's not about me, it's about having interesting conversations with people that are further down the path that I want to travel. It's my life university, you know, it's a free education. It's fantastic. You just get to be enlightened by all these amazing people and get all these different perspectives, but share it with hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people along the way.
That's beautiful. And it's, so you guys work together. run organization or?
No, we're separate entities. Oh, and we actually met at an event when Ellie was one of my
I was learning all about public speaking and I want to get better at connection, but I was a disruptive one at the back of the room because I was really struggling with like the formula, the sort of prescriptive nature of it.
It was the sales part of it. So we teach public speaking, but we teach selling. So when I teach public speaking, it is about selling yourself, selling you as the best person to invest in, but also we teach how to sell products and services. Yeah. And that was the discord that you had.
Yeah.
And I'm very much a challenge accepted. Yeah. You will enjoy this. And it was a case of go through the motions of it, even if you never use it, having that skill set, as you say, of being able to be a salesperson. But I think I've gone full circle. That's the part that I love. I have a business around property, but that's a vehicle. That's the cash flow vehicle.
But I think it's not a salesperson uses sales. It's everybody needs to use sales. Like I think this whole podcast is all sales.
Absolutely.
Because we have to sell that motivation, we have to sell that idea, we have to sell that philosophy. And it's everything is sales, and people don't understand that, you know.
You know what's interesting though? I went from one extreme to another. I was the top salesperson. I managed 100 staff for a double glazing firm, cold calling people trying to sell windows and doors. Mm. I've done door-to-door canvassing and had rejection after rejection after rejection, door slammed in my face, I've had abuse, I've had people threatening to attack me, the full job lot, yet I was the top salesperson and made a real success of that. But it then, as I started to change as a person, I almost threw the baby out with the bathwater, a little bit like yourself as an entrepreneur, as a businessman, making your millions and then going down the spiritual route and almost like turning your back on the previous business acumen that you'd gained and then kind of coming
full circle. So you went through a parallel journey then.
Yep.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And now I very much agree. We're constantly selling ourselves. You know, we're selling our message, and you have to do that to make the biggest impact. But I suppose it's when you stop making it about you and start making it about other people. And again, even taking it back to the public speaking, I can understand why so many people are terrified of it. I was a nervous wreck, was shaking physically. And I think it was actually like a Simon Sinek video that I watched around conquering your nerves. And he said, you're making it about you. Mm. By and large, 99.9% of the people in that audience, they want you to succeed. But by making it about you, you're not making it about the audience. Mm-hmm. You're not making it about the message that you're trying to deliver. It's almost a little bit self-indulgent, but for the right reasons. It's a self-preservation. We want to embarrass ourselves.
Yeah.
We don't want to humiliate ourselves. But by focusing on that, we're not focusing on getting the message out there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's right.
but
I think also another thing as well. You know, when you talk about putting out these podcast shows and free content and everything, I think that's it's very good. But I always see that as like it is a level one of the information, because there's only so much. I mean, it's not like you're gonna sit here and read a whole real estate contract out and this how to do the lease or anything like that. So it's like level one of the inspiration, you know. And I think that when people are ready, again, when the student is ready, I think it's important for them to understand that when they. There's a saying that says when people pay more, they pay more attention, you know, and I see that in a lot of things we do, like, because we every month we have a free satsang and on full moon, so anyone can come for free. And pretty much every 2 or 3 months, we will have a free 11-day yoga thing. So anyone can join for free. And it's very interesting. Sometimes you see the show up on something like that, as opposed to something where they paid for a course or paid for a mentorship.
Yeah.
The show up is strong, you know? And I think it's important that there's two things. I think on a mental, on a physical, when people are, let's say, paying for your mentorship or coaching, Tony, it's they will take it more seriously. And in actual fact, it's also directly proportional to the amount they invest as well. Mm-hmm. Let's say, for example, if they invest 25,000, I don't know how much the coaching is. Let's say it's 25,000 as opposed to 2,000, example. The person who invests 25,000, they will do a lot more. They will, because in the back of their head, they know how much they invested and they know they need to do a lot more to at least make that back and make some profits. Their efforts is completely different. So from a mental standpoint, the motivation shifts. But from an energetic standpoint, this is what a lot of people don't realize as well. If we talk about spirituality, even when you go to church, they bring over the bucket and then you make your donations. Yep. And people sometimes I see people get frustrated about that. Why am I making, I always come around with this bucket thing, right? But you need to understand, if you're going to a place and you're receiving and you're not putting any energy out, actually the law of energy, you're receiving, but nothing's going out. There is no flow. Mm. So there is nothing more to come back in.
Mm. Interesting.
And it's a lack and a scarcity vibration that a lot of people don't realize. And so that's why I always say to people, I say, it doesn't actually matter what you do. If you come to, let's say, even sometimes people come to any of our trainings or anything, I say, it doesn't matter what you do. Even if you seriously are saying that even with this free training, afterwards, when you make money with it, you are putting some money to charity or you're doing something, do something with it.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
There has to be an exchange because this is a universal law. And people who are too fixated holding, they're holding onto this thing. Right? They're not willing to put out. There's nothing to come in because it's not open. The space is not open.
Absolutely.
So I think people need to realize that too, because you also have a lot of people who is always the freebie people, which is fine. But when it's time to level up and you realize how energies work, you'll be very willing to put out, you know?
The other side of that as well is you're also depriving people of the joy of giving. And we've had that conversation before. Mm. We like to be the givers historically. Yeah. That's in our nature. And it's actually taken a lot more self-work, really, to be open to receiving and realizing other people do get pleasure from doing that, as I do.
Right.
So it's allowing that energy to exchange.
Mm. I do think there is, though, a perspective in there, because when you talk about the numbers, bizarrely, there is a small contingent of people who pay a significant sum for mentorship.
Uh-huh.
And because when we look at perspective, in their grand scheme of things, it's not a huge amount.
Yeah.
But we've got people who pay £25,000 and just not turn up.
Yeah.
And they're a very small contingent of people. And you say that to the freebie person who comes along to every free event with every good intention of doing something. And then you ask them when they come back to the next free event, what have you done? And it's, well. Whereas if I've got someone who pays £40,000 for mentorship, like they're showing up.
Mm-hmm.
Not just physically, they are showing up with everything done.
Right.
Other than that small contingent of people for whom £40,000 or £25,000 is not a significant amount of money.
Yeah.
So how do they then hold themselves to account? Because if the monetary basis isn't there...
No, then they need to pay you $150,000.
Julian, anyone who's listening, I'm now $150,000, not $40,000 for mentorship.
I'll tell you, actually, it's I'm a big believer in coaches and mentors. I've had it all my life in every area. Anything I wanted to grow a YouTube channel, I pay for a coach. I wanted to do NFT, I pay for a coach. I go to do anything, I pay for a coach, because I'm a big believer in not just the receiving the shortcut and the knowledge, but the energy exchange. I'm really a big believer in that. When I first came over to Dubai, there's a gym next to our studios, about five minute away. It's called Gymnation. They only do it's like cheap and cheerful. It's big. It has everything. It's only I think 100 a month or something like that. It's only £20 or whatever, right? So it's like, wow, cheap and cheerful. And it has everything I need. It even has the boxing ring and everything that I need. But it was very interesting, my perspective of how I see these things now, because that was exactly what you said there was to me. I said, I really don't care about that 20 something.
It's, right? it's only 20 quid.
So, it's so much that it's just another direct debit from my account that, same with all the YouTube premium and iTunes that I never listen to music and everything that I'm paying for. I don't know, I've been paying for years, right? All of that, it's the same.
It's not painful.
It's going to be another thing. So I was like, that's not going to get me to the gym. That's all right, but it had all the facilities. And imagine, around the corner, you have 7Gym, which is charging, about 10 times more or whatever. It's ridiculous, but it's a smaller gym.
Yeah.
Less facilities. And I'm looking at that. I said, I think I need to go for this one. I need to go for some VIP package on this one. Because if I'm paying that amount of money every single month, now I'm looking at it, I'm like...
Feel that.
I think I should go to the gym today. and it happens, really. Like, every couple of weeks, it's been a week I haven't gone to the gym. I'm just like, I need to go. And it's not because I'm feeling belly fat.
Yeah.
It's because I'm just paying the damn people for nothing. You know, I need to go there. You know? And because I'm a big believer in that now. Yeah. The energy you put out, the energy you get back.
Oh,
I love that. I feel like we could just talk forever.
All day.
There's just so much wisdom in everything you're saying. Final question for you, though, because we've got to respect your time, unfortunately. We'll have you back for round two when I move to Dubai, for sure, though. The name of the podcast is On a Mission. What is your mission?
To bring love consciousness to the wealthy people and wealth consciousness to the loving people.
Oh, wow. That was so succinct and absolutely perfect. It has been an absolute pleasure. It truly has. Your energy is just absolutely incredible. And it's been an absolute honor to have you on the podcast.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thank you.